Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. If you like politics, this was your week. If you like a booming economy, it was not. But in the hubbub of presidential exits, endorsements, and debate, who knew? On Monday, Democratic icon Senator Ted Kennedy, with JFK's Caroline at his side, made a choice.
I'm proud to stand with him here today and offer my help, offer my voice, offer my energy, my commitment to make Barack Obama the next president of the United States.
After failure in Florida, Mayor Rudy Giuliani bowed out with a bouquet for Senator John McCain.
I am very proud to endorse my friend and fellow Republican, a hero, John McCain of Arizona, for president of the United States of America.
And last night at the Democratic debate in Los Angeles, Senator Hillary Clinton told the country why she could be an agent of change after so many years of just two families in the White House.
You know, it did take a Clinton to clean after the first Bush, and I think it might take another one to clean up after the second Bush.
This hour On Point, our weekly news roundtable, goes behind the headlines. Joining us today from Washington is Todd Lindbergh. He's contributing editor at the Weekly Standard, a fellow at the Hoover Institution, and full disclosure, he is also on a list of informal, unpaid foreign policy advisors to Senator John McCain. Todd Lindbergh, thanks very much for joining us.
Tom, glad to be with you.
From New York, we're joined by the great Krista Freeland, U.S. Managing Editor for the Financial Times. Krista, thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be here.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News Analyst Jack Beattie, Senior Editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Hi, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Todd, and Krista.
Krista, let's go first to you on this economy. Numbers just out on employment, they're not good. It's actually down, a loss. Where does this economy stand at the end of this week when the Fed has come back in with another rate cut? What's the direction here?
Well, I think no one knows for sure, but the signs are pretty grim. And one issue which might seem technical, but which is worrying a lot of people on Wall Street right now, is whether the specifically financial crisis is finished. The aspect which is really getting a lot of people excited at the moment is an obscure part of the business called bond insurers. These are people that actually we weren't really writing about 6 months ago, who insure a lot of bonds, including municipal bonds, around $2 trillion worth, and they are starting to lose their credit ratings. If the big bond insurers go under, that could trigger more billion-dollar write-downs at the Wall Street firms and have a real ripple effect in the economy. So what people are really concerned about, what we're focusing on a lot, are the specific financial problems which triggered this crisis over, or do we have more unknown unknowns out there?
Todd Lindbergh, this economy is lurking behind practically everything on the campaign trail. It was certainly loomed large in the debate at the Reagan Library near Simi Valley in California this week. What did you hear in the back and forth between Mitt Romney, former CEO, turnaround artist, famously proud of his business acumen and with many successes on that front, and John McCain, former POW, man of courage, hero?
Well, I think if you look at the major differences between Republicans on economic matters, they tend to converge. There's not actually a great deal of sentiment, for example, on the Republican side for any kind of deals that would entail increasing taxes, et cetera. There's more of an emphasis on spending reduction. I think, just speaking analytically as opposed to stating my preference, Romney has a very good businessman sense of the economy, and certainly he's well qualified to speak to those questions. I think the really interesting thing that's going on now, though, is just exactly where the stimulus package is headed in Washington. There was a hope, I guess, that there would be relatively quick action, that essentially the Senate would approve what the House had already approved without amendment. But now that looks like it really is not going to happen, that the Senate wants to weigh in. But that, in turn, will take 60 votes. And as Harry Reid said the other day, he's got a couple of senators out on the campaign trail right at the moment, and he might need them.
By name of Obama and Clinton.
Exactly.
Jack Beatty, let's stick with the economy for a second. A lot to talk about here, but pivoting on the economy, how do you see it playing into this campaign? First, in the McCain-Romney race, can McCain, you know, stand up to Romney's claims of expertise in this area? I guess he did in Florida. And what about on the Democrat side? Does it augur one way or the other, highlight one policy or another between Clinton and Obama?
Well, on the Republican side, I think that John McCain does talk about getting spending down, but he also talks about dealing with the ATM, alternative minimum tax, and with the and with making the Bush tax cuts permanent. Now, both of those things would widen the deficit by mega dimensions, and yet he says he wants to cut spending to deal with the deficit. So there's an issue there almost of math. How can you be for all these tax cuts and say we're going to have a balanced budget? I think that's going to come back to haunt all of the Republicans. On the Democratic side, I think Barack Obama really made the key point last night, which is, the question is, who's going to be paying more in taxes and who's going to be getting a tax cut? And the way the Democrats are setting it up, people beneath, or Obama at least, people beneath $75,000 are going to get a tax cut. Social Security recipients earning less than $50,000 are going to get a tax cut. People earning over $200,000, the Bush tax cut people, they're going to get a tax increase. So he was setting it up as someone's going to pay more and someone's going to be paying less. And I think that's a pretty effective way to put it.
The Republicans still trying to chew through what it means to look at these two, Romney and McCain. Here's Rush Limbaugh this week. He's repeatedly slammed John McCain for not being conservative enough. Talking about the economy, here he is on Tuesday joking about McCain being a liberal.
McCain had to admit the other day that he doesn't know much about the economy. He's got to shore up on it. But now he's out ridiculing the private sector and people in it. He wants you to believe he's a conservative. Ridiculing the private sector. It's another knee-jerk reaction. And you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of Senator McCain's opposition to the tax cuts of 2001 and 2003, the liberal knee-jerk opposition.
Krista Freeland, this week we learned that John McCain says he's been boning up on Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. Not exactly right out of the gate there. You know, at his age, he's sort of reading for the first time, becoming the economist. What about the Republicans? I mean, we have everything from Huckabee talking his populist line, Romney trumpeting his corporate credentials, John McCain saying being a leader is more important than being a manager. How do you see the GOP looking at the economic challenges, Krista?
Well, I think, Tom, that you, and I think it was Todd, were right to say the economy is an issue that generally plays to Mitt Romney's strengths. He is a businessman. He was an extremely effective, extremely successful businessman, and he understands economic issues. He can talk about them with great credibility. I think that Rush Limbaugh line that you played to us, though, points to something that's going to be tough for all of the Republicans with the economic situation we're in right now. And that is that the Republican Party has been really focused of late on issues like tax cuts. We're moving into a very different economic situation where the real economic action, the real issues that people are going to be talking about who are in touch with what's actually going on, are things like a fiscal stimulus. And what, you know, technical economists are worried about is not so much tax cuts or even budget deficits. They're worried about the danger that America could fall into a Japanese-style liquidity trap, this sort of thing that we saw in Japan in the 1990s, where even with very low interest rates, you just couldn't get the economy going again. So I think the frame of the economic debate has changed very profoundly, and you've seen the Democrats responding to that. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, John Edwards all had pretty good, pretty similar fiscal stimulus plans ahead of the entire Republican pack.
Todd Lindbergh, does this leave the GOP in a... I mean, what does it do to their prospects for somehow pulling out a victory? It looks like a long shot at this point for the White House, but you never know. But with this economic news, more bad numbers on unemployment, the more financial problems potentially in the pipeline, I mean, is that a hill that the GOP can climb if that got that headwind in their face?
Well, you know, nobody thinks that this is a particularly terrific electoral environment for Republicans. I think that, you know, that began with trouble in Iraq, and now, you know, with the economy behaving the way it is, it's not great. But I think people are going to listen to what the candidates put on the table, and the tax issue, notwithstanding the changes in attitude that people have been expressing, has been a very potent issue for Republicans, and I would expect it to continue to be. I think Obama is effective in saying some will pay more, but some will pay less, and trying to draw a line. But Republicans will, I think, challenge that by saying, well, you know, who do you really mean? Who do you really think is going to be paying more? And is there really going to be this kind of cut materializing? And that's a pretty good argument. It's been effective in the past politically, and it may yet be effective again.
Krista, on Wall Street, elsewhere in the economy, are they holding their breath for the stimulus package? Or as it appears to get a bit delayed, does it look like it may be irrelevant?
Well, I think if it's not passed soon, then it does become irrelevant. Larry Summers, who was one of the first advocates of the stimulus package,
former
said,
Treasury Secretary,
Yeah, exactly. Said in order for it to work, it had to be temporary, targeted, and most important of all, timely. And his view was that if it wasn't in place by the end of March, it probably doesn't have much impact at all. So I think the Senate and the White House are really up against the clock. If they don't get their act together, I think that that could have political implications. And you could see people on the campaign trail pointing fingers as to, you know, who's to blame for this action not having been taken.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news with big politics, more big economic question marks, and the race for the White House touching everything this week. Krista Freeland is with us from the Financial Times. Todd Lindberg from the Weekly Standard and the Hoover Institution is here. Jack Beatty's here as well. Let's listen to a couple of the endorsements that came out this week. First to California Governor, Republican Arnold Schwarzenegger in Los Angeles yesterday, endorsing Arizona Senator John McCain.
He has incredible credentials and national security. And of course, he is a fantastic, outstanding public servant. He's a great American hero and an extraordinary leader. And this is why I'm endorsing him to be our next president of the United States. So let's hear from Senator McCain. Thank you very much.
Endorsements fly on the GOP side earlier in the week. What a moment with her uncle, Senator Ted Kennedy, at her side, the daughter of former President John F. Kennedy, Caroline, endorsed Barack Obama for president at American University.
Over the years, I've been deeply moved by the people who've told me that they wish they could feel inspired and hopeful about America the way they did when my father was president. This longing is even more profound today. Fortunately, there is one candidate who offers that same sense of hope and inspiration. And I am proud to endorse Senator Barack Obama for President of the United States.
Caroline Kennedy there on Monday. Let's sit and look at this Democratic matchup for a moment now. Jack, first to you, John Edwards is out. What does it mean?
Well, first of all, let's tip the hat to John Edwards just for a second. Paul Krugman in the Times today points out how he really drove the issue debate among the Democrats, whether the issue was the economic stimulus or earlier, universal health insurance. He's the one who, I think, really pushed the other candidates to define their issues and push them further in a populist direction. So I think that was his contribution to this. But you know, it's strange that in all the Democratic debates, I watched all of them. Maybe I missed something, but I don't remember a single question to him on one of his charter issues, poverty, and what he means to do about it. 37 million Americans at or below the poverty line. What's your plan? Well, he actually had a plan that involved, you know, a million public service jobs for the long-term unemployed, especially teenagers, as a way of giving people work experience, references, and starting them up the ladder. No question about that. No question about what Bill Clinton called the other day the searing inequality of America today. No question to the candidates about that. Why? Well, I think we got a hint, really, in one of these debates when Charles Gibson, the ABC moderator, said, talking about, I think it was at St. Anselm's College
up in New Hampshire,
Manchester. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said, well, you know, $200,000. That's two professors here, and you know, married. That's
the jaws dropped at St. Anselm's.
Yeah,
faculty
I mean, people
club.
Were just absolutely, and of course, you know, only
because
3%,
they don't make that much.
Yes, and only 3% of American earners' families earn that or more. But that shows the world of the television people. These are the people that ask the questions. They live in a world where that kind of error is just seems natural because everybody they know earns more than that money, that amount of money. So questions about labor, questions about inequality, questions about poverty, we don't hear that. And Edward suffered from that because of this, you know, I mean, it's clear that the media is more liberal than the general public on social issues, not so at all on economic ones. And I think that really was part of the shutout on Edwards on the issue side.
Krista Freeland, what about the Kennedy endorsement and how you've seen it now ripple through this week and maybe even how it lay behind last night's debate between Senator Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama? Do you see big impact here? And what about the Republicans have their own internal fights? What about the effect of this internally within the Democratic Party?
I think the Kennedy endorsement was extremely significant for Barack Obama for a couple of reasons. The first one maybe is that it is a very powerful symbolic weapon, I think, for him to undercut the not enough experience argument. Ted Kennedy is taking a big risk in supporting Barack Obama. He could easily have remained neutral. And, you know, had he remained neutral, he could have, you know, great political strength in a Hillary Clinton administration. I think having come out so strongly in support of Barack Obama, if Hillary does win, things could be kind of sticky for him. So he's taking a risk. People know that. And in saying, with all of my own experience, I am putting the Kennedy mantle around you, I think that that is very, very powerful. I also think that it comes at a moment when the Democratic establishment, which came back and rallied again behind Hillary Clinton after New Hampshire, was starting to wonder. I think that Bill Clinton's comments ahead of the South Carolina race, particularly his comment about Jesse Jackson,
having won there twice, appearing to discount Obama's win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, appearing to discount it and to make it seem as if his win was connected, you know, very
just
specifically
kind of a racial
with his race.
Thing. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I think that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, including people who are supporters of Hillary Clinton. And so I think that the fact that, you know, really this big, massive Democratic establishment presence, Senator Ted Kennedy, is coming out in support of Obama, it reflects sort of a deeper discontent within the Democratic establishment, which had been behind Hillary as the candidate of inevitability.
Let's take a call. Lots of listeners want to join us here. What do you think of the endorsements flying this week? We've got a call here from Michael in Boston. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Jack. Until last night, I was actually an undecided voter. And I know that the voting records of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are very similar. In fact, there was a Congressional Quarterly article that said that they vote the party line pretty much all the time. I think Hillary Clinton 98% of the time and Barack Obama about 97% of the time. That being said, I'm expecting that their voting records as president will be similar. So,
where does that leave you after last night's debate, Michael?
Well, I was actually really impressed with Hillary Clinton's public policy acumen, and I'd like your experts to comment on that.
On which issues in particular?
On health care. I think that she was really impressive on the health care issue and on foreign policy as well. So, although she, of course, voted for the authorization I was really impressed with her performance, and she really appealed to me intellectually. That being said, I think that Barack Obama is a very impressive candidate, and I think that he's a very visceral candidate, and I'm happy that he's really galvanized all of these Democratic voters, and I think that's important. But I think for right now, I think it's important that the future president is a person who can really get the job done.
Not going to be an easy decision for Democrats. And when the decision is made and one of these candidates is no longer in contention, this party is going to feel the loss. Todd Lindbergh, you stand in kind of conservative ground there. But look across the line at the issues and in particular, maybe on health care. Michael says Hillary Clinton won him over last night. They got some of the heat out of the kitchen, a little more straight up policy conversation last night. And she won this voter.
Well, I think that to the extent that people think this, that come to think as our caller did, that the real question is going to be policy and and your details and your command of the policy questions, then they're probably going to tip, as the caller did, toward Senator Clinton. If on the other hand you what you really want to feel is that sense of inspiration. So in a way, it's sort of in the weeds with policy versus in the sky with this truly charismatic appeal that Obama puts on, and it's interesting that the race should queue up like that. I think the Kennedy endorsement is important, but we shouldn't, I think, oversell its importance. I mean, for a long time there have been kind of two major centers of gravity in the Democratic Party, and for purposes of argument, I'm going to call one of them Clinton, and I'm going to call the other one Kennedy. So there is not necessarily a natural affinity there.
Sort of centrist Clinton versus Kennedy, more traditional left-leaning.
Yes, but here is what I think is a bit of a paradox, and it's that the candidate who is running more like Bill Clinton in 1992 at the moment, I think, is not Senator Clinton, but Barack Obama. And he is trying to make this this appeal a little more broad, that he is trying to present himself as a kind of post-partisan kind of figure. And that is that seems to be a source of serious attraction for him, including, by the way, among a few Republicans. Let's be frank about that. He has an appeal across party lines that I certainly don't think Senator Clinton is going to develop anytime soon.
Tom, on Michael's point about Hillary's expertise, the New York Times referred to her as brilliant and knowledgeable, richly knowledgeable in their endorsement of her candidacy, and she's also political. Courageous on the health care issue. I think she made clear last night that Obama's plan that will not on universal health care, that would leave 15 million people uninsured, one estimate has it, because he does not insist on individual mandates. But she does.
That is on requiring everyone to get themselves covered or get help in being covered.
Of course, you're running against a Republican and you're saying the state is going to require you to sign up for health insurance, and unless you do, you're going to be fined. That's a tough position. I think Obama's position is all about, well, we're not going to require people to do it. So it's I think she very rightly exposed it as a political position in the first place, perhaps masquerading itself as a policy one. But on the other hand, and she's going to have to make the tougher case to the Republicans. Yes, we have to require it, because unless everybody does it, the thing won't work. That takes some guts, but it also raises the issue, well, would Obama's be easy to sell because it doesn't have that compulsory aspect? And the second thing that you notice about Hillary is the flex of intelligence that come in and modulation that come into everything she says. Last night she's talking about undocumented immigrants getting citizenship, and she said, and we're going to require you to learn English, and by the way, we're going to help you do that because the ESL programs are not really working very well, so we're going to help you do that. She went on. A couple of weeks ago, she's talking about perhaps striking at the Al-Qaeda camps in Pakistan. And she said, well, before we do anything like that, we have to make sure the Pakistani government knows what we're doing because of their hair trigger situation with India. Again, You know, she's thinking all the time. That's a nuance, you could say. That's a little wonkery, you could say. But it shows a remarkable policy intelligence at work.
Mm, of course, we saw that Predator strike on Al-Qaeda leader right on that Pakistani border just yesterday. Let's get a call from Mike in Norwich, Connecticut. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I want to call and talk about the Republican convention, the debate, rather, on CNN the other night. I'm an undecided voter here in Connecticut, and I've been following this the candidacies for all the people very closely.
Yes.
And I tuned in really to hopefully make my decision. And I was a little disappointed when all the questions were basically going to John McCain and Mitt Romney. Mike Huckabee and Ron Paul seemed like second-class candidates sitting over there. Never getting much to really say to get their positions out, and when they did, they almost seemed like they were cut short.
It was hard for them to get a word in edgewise, and what, you wish the field would stay bigger and multi-voiced a while longer, Mike?
Well, I think it seems like the mainstream media is constantly giving all the coverage to the quote-unquote front-runners.
Now that's just about all that's going to be left. Mike, our time is short, but thanks for calling with that. Krista, what about it? How does this primary season feel to you? Like, it gave a good airing. People got to hear enough before, you know, the dropouts began. Or kind of a rush before all these, 20-plus states have their say next week?
Well, Tom, I'm not American myself, and mm-hmm. the Financial Times is a global newspaper, so
we'll
maybe you'll let me give a slightly outside perspective.
Sure.
And I have to say, looking at it a little bit as an outsider, I've been incredibly impressed by the rigor, the openness, the detail of the political process so far. You can definitely take issue with whether all the questions in the debates were the right ones. You know, I think Jack's point about income inequality is a really good one, and I've been surprised that hasn't emerged as a bigger issue in the contest. It's definitely true that the moderators have had a hard time figuring out whether they should focus just on the front-running candidates or on the whole field. Mm. But I've been really impressed by how closely watched the debates have been. How interesting the debates have been. They've really brought out policy differences in addition to character differences between the candidates. And I think, you know, in the primary process, which particularly if you approach it from the outside, in many ways is very bizarre, has brought out some interesting contrast between the candidates. I think that we've learned a lot in ways that in political systems with a much more internally party-driven process, you don't always see. So I would, you know, from the outside, American democracy looks pretty good to me.
Todd Lindberg, how's it look to you? We've heard very different voices on this, some saying this has been a mess and a bum's rush and we need Congress to step in and do something about it. Others, the LA Times, saying, you know, hey, this isn't too bad. We had a good airing here. How do you see it, Todd?
Well, you know, I got to admit, in a month or so ago, I would have said something like, boy, this has really gone on forever. And, you know, what are we achieving here? But then all of a sudden, you know, people start voting and going to caucuses.
Yeah.
And wow, then it gets really interesting. So I think the process is actually working. And, you know, I think one of the problems, though, is that Ron Paul, Huckabee, the other Republicans in the race who've now dropped out, you know, there were a lot of debates in which they did, you know, participate as full and equal. But that was at a point in the process where, you know, frankly, people weren't focused on it. I mean, if you were a political junkie, you were watching those debates, but maybe only if you were a political junkie. Otherwise, you weren't really sort of tuned into it yet because it was a little, you know, it was a little upfront. It was a little premature. And, you know, to some degree, the same on the Democratic side. So, you know, it's unfortunate. Just when you mm-hmm. want to hear, for example, more of Huckabee or of Ron Paul, that's the point at which the process begins to dial down on the two people who are really the closest contenders.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Big politics, more big economic question marks, the race for the White House touching everything. But there was more. In Glendale, Arizona, the Patriots and New York Giants get ready for Super Bowl 42. On Media Day, one reporter from TV Azteca in Mexico City, in full wedding dress, had something to ask Patriots quarterback Tom Brady.
I've never had a proposal. What's your name first?
I'm Inez.
Inez, a beautiful name, Inez.
Marry me. What's... I'm the real Miss Brady.
Marry me. Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick delivered an abject TV apology after his extramarital affair with his chief of staff was uncovered last week.
I've been hurting because I know that many of you are hurting. And most of all, I've been hurting because I know my family is hurting. And I'm responsible for that.
And last night, the much-hyped season 4 premiere of TV's most confusing series, Lost, hit the air.
We have to go back!
We have to go back to what, where? Krista Freeland of the Financial Times is with us. Todd Lindbergh is here. He's a contributing editor at the Weekly Standard, research fellow at the Hoover Institution. Full disclosure, he's an informal, unpaid foreign policy advisor to John McCain. We're counting on him being as upright as he can. In spite of that, let's go to Columbia, South Carolina, and Sheldon. Sheldon, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I like a dwindling feel because, you know, it brings out, you know, like they say, the cream rises to the top. And, you know, and on the Democratic side, you've got, you know, Hillary Clinton, you know, Senator Barack Obama. And then with the Republicans, you know, you've got John McCain. And this election will require enormous amounts of money. So as far as, you know, your question about, you know, the money, it's going to take a lot. But my burning question is, where will the allegiances and where will the supporters of John Edwards, where are they going to go? Because, you know, Senator Edwards has said he's leaving it up, you know, to his former constituents to decide, you know, whether they want to choose, you know, Senator Clinton or, you know, Senator Obama. So that's the million-dollar question that's burning, you know, with me.
Sheldon, let us look at exactly that. Here is John Edwards dropping out of the presidential race this week in New Orleans, the city where his campaign began.
Today, I am suspending my campaign for the Democratic nomination for the presidency. But I want to say this to everyone, with Elizabeth, with my family, with my friends, with all of you and all of your support, this son of a mill worker is going to be just fine.
Well, we expect he will be just fine, but what about his issues? Here he was staying on message as he left the race.
I say to all those who are struggling in this country, we will never forget you. We will fight for you. We will stand up for you.
John Edwards said he had spoken with each of the other candidates remaining, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and each had pledged to carry the torch on the poverty issue. Todd Lindbergh, what about that as the engine of a political campaign in this country? Does John Edwards' third place finish prove that what? That Americans don't rally to the poverty cry?
Well, you know, I think there has to be more than that. And in choosing to place all the emphasis on that, you know, maybe that was not a broad enough message to generate real appeal. On the other hand, you know, I think it's important that the Democrats get back in this game. You know, there was a point where you could pretty much count on the Democratic presidential nominee, maybe even up through Mondale or so, to, you know, spend a fair bit of time talking about poverty issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that kind of got a little bit triangulated out of the picture during the 1990s. And I think that, you know, to the extent that Edwards is able to bring that back into the conversation, that's a good thing. Now, you know, I think, you know, I'm going to have different ideas about what we're going to do about what we ought to be doing about this very serious issue from, you know, people on the other side. But I think it's important that it be in the conversation. And, you know, oddly enough, it was in some respects it was Republicans who were talking a little bit more about it, often making, you know, proposals like, for example, school vouchers for poor people who can't, you know, feel trapped in the public school system that isn't serving them well. Proposals that were controversial
and made as inequality grew and grew and grew.
Yeah.
But still, there they were. Krista, what about poverty and Edwards and the lesson that future Democrats may take from his withdrawal here?
Well, I think the part of John Edwards' message that was a very hard sell was the way he connected his focus on poverty, which I agree with Todd is something that is sort of oddly missing from the debate, with a very powerful anti-corporate rhetoric. On the stump, in a lot of the debates, he talked about all the evils of big business, the evils of corporate America. And whether or not you think that those attacks are just, they don't seem to work very well. They don't seem to get a lot of traction. I think that John McCain had a very good line and sort of captured how Americans tend to feel when he said, Americans don't hate wealthy people, they want to become wealthy people. And that, I think, is a real challenge for the Democrats, which is we are living in a period of extreme income inequality, much greater than America has had since the Second World War. And yet to find a way for the Democrats to talk about that, which doesn't seem to be anti-rich people and which doesn't seem to be anti-aspirational, I think is tricky. If they can find a way to do it, I think it could be a really potent issue.
Of course, you know, with Edwards, I mean, he wasn't. He's wealthy himself. His point was the hammerlock that the interests and the wealthy have on government. His point was on that, you know, what Andrew Jackson called the machinations of the busy few. The busy few who control government. And he was saying, that's what I'm against. I'm for private enterprise. I'm for rich people, even. But for heaven's sakes, do it on your own and don't bend the government to your purposes, as has happened throughout the last 8 years. So I think, you know, I think it was really less anti-rich people and anti-corporation than, you know, anti-corrupt politics.
Though you could hear it both ways, no question. Debbie's calling from Ashby, Massachusetts. Debbie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to comment on something that Jack Beatty had said earlier, mm-hmm. and when he was describing Hillary in terms of her, not only her understanding of all the issues, but, you know, she can just call things up on a dime, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yep.
And I too, have been amazed and thought, you know, they need to put her in high school debating classes, you know, show them how to do it.
She's a ways beyond that now. But, so what do you think then, Debbie?
Well, to teach them. But anyway, but my thought was, you know, granted, Barack Obama hasn't had all these years of focusing on these issues as she has, but I just think that what he has, I think, you know, those things can be learned. And what he has is a gift, and you can't learn that. You can't learn that. And I just was taken back to thinking of back when we went into Iraq with the buildup. It was the anniversary of the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Mm.
And so you guys were playing a lot of President Kennedy's speeches.
Yep.
And he had that ability to take people to a higher place. And that's what Obama has. And I think with all that we are facing, that we so need someone that can do that. You know, he can learn this stuff and surround himself with the people that need to inform him. But Hillary doesn't have that gift, and you can't learn it.
Clearly, a lot of people also looking at things along those lines. Debbie, let us hold that thought for just a second, if I may, and thank you for your call. And get one more here from Burlington, Vermont, and Tony. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tom. I'm a middle-aged man with an 18-year-old daughter who's been on the campaign trail for Barack Obama, both in New Hampshire and South Carolina. So I'm following the races on both sides of the aisle more closely than I ordinarily would.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, I watched the debates last night, and I've been listening to the candidates over the past week, and my question has to do with the politics of fear. I feel as though neither of the Democratic candidates came out forcefully enough last night in the debate.
Now, whose politics of fear? What exactly do you mean by that, Tony?
In terms of the taking on the rhetoric, for example, from John McCain, you know, describing Islamic fundamentalism as being the
challenge of the century.
Exactly, mm-hmm. and I feel like that's one of the things that propelled us into the war in Iraq, and one of the things that helped George Bush over the top and back into the White House 4 years ago. And this may sound like a partisan question, but it's more comes from a feeling as though the world is becoming increasingly belligerent and feeling as though the United States maybe should be trying to take a role in calming that down. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if your panel has an opinion about which of the Democratic candidates might stand a better chance against, for example, John McCain, were he to get the nomination on the Republican side, to take him on that particular issue.
It's a good question, Tony. Crystal, let me come first to you. Debbie raises the issue of the gift of charisma and oratory. We heard earlier about Hillary's brilliance. Well, she checks that box. Obama may check this one. And then Tony says, what about the politics of fear? If we get into a general election, if it is John McCain, and he clearly will go at this national security, you know, never surrender theme very hard, well, who's got the more effective toolkit to enter that conversation, Krista? Clinton or Obama?
Well, maybe to take Debbie's point first, I think that Debbie summarized very concisely the sort of choice between micro trend, very, very detailed, very impressive knowledge of the issues that Hillary Clinton has demonstrated versus the Barack Obama vision appeal. The one thing that I would say about Hillary Clinton is I think that if you were talking or thinking about her campaign a year ago, there's an element to her campaign that would have given her that sort of that vision, that transcendental edge, which is that she's a woman. And she's just really unlucky that she happens to have come onto the national political stage, into the national race, at a time when there's a candidate who, in his person, offers equal or you know, maybe more if you wanted to debate the issue, transcendence. So I think that's sort of an interesting aspect there. In terms of the politics of fear, I think that is an excellent point. I think the economy is going to help neutralize that issue really significantly. I do think, absent any unforeseen international terrorist action, this is looking more and more like a year when it's going to be as in 92, and it's the economy stupid election. One interesting point, though, on that, you know, who can best counter McCain is, as I think Todd was suggesting, I think Barack Obama has a lot of Republicans really worried. I think that Republicans are seeing, although his actual voting record is as liberal as Hillary Clinton's, if not more so, he does appeal to independent voters. The way that he has pitched his rhetoric feels less confrontational, feels more open. And so I think at that level, he could be quite powerful. And he does have on his side the fact that he was an early and outspoken and, you know, courageous opponent of the war in Iraq.
Let's hear from one of those voters, Joanne in Nashua, New Hampshire. Hi, Joanne. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. How are you?
Very well. What do you know?
Oh, not too much. Hey, I live in central New York, and I'm traveling to New Hampshire for the weekend.
Great.
And I've been listening to your program, and I'm quite inspired by you guys as hosts and of the callers that are coming in. However, I just wanted to voice a little concern because, you know, we do have Hillary as a senator for New York State, and I think she's probably a great mom, great senator, a great woman. Mm-hmm. However, my thoughts are, you know, being a registered Republican, I have been able to be out in New Hampshire when the primaries were going on here.
Right.
And was able to witness a number of candidates, and I'm just wary. I'm afraid with Hillary that a lot of what she is depicting are her husband's words, and sometimes I wonder who is running, Bill or Hillary.
But you're a registered Republican, Joanne. Why does it matter to you?
What's that?
Why does it matter to you, then?
Well, I'm looking at all the candidates, but as far as I'm concerned, it's come to the age of, it's not necessarily who the candidate is, it's who can get the job done. I mean, because right now with the Republican candidates, we've got John McCain and we've got Mitt Romney. And listening to the people talking about the health care issues that were talked on the debate last night in California.
So where are you leaning?
Pardon me?
Where are you leaning in your support?
Well, I'm torn right now between Mitt Romney and Obama. Because, I mean, John McCain's age concerns me. Because the man will be 72 if he's sworn into office. And if he goes 4 years, if he goes 8 years, you know, he could be, you know, 76 to 80.
So you're the living proof of Krista Freeland's, you know, description here of Republican potential fear of Obama. You might be that crossover candidate. Todd Lindbergh, how about it?
Yeah, I think it's real. But I also have to tell you that Democrats don't want to run against John McCain. And that is palpable. And by the way, you know, the reasons for this that are you know, verifiable. I mean, you look at the polling, the head-to-head matchups. The only Republican who runs ahead of Senator Clinton is McCain. And interestingly enough, you know, the Obama-McCain matchup is closer. So if it comes down to, you know, if the two parties decided to nominate a candidate solely on the basis of what the evidence so far shows about who would do best against the opposing field, then it would be a McCain-Obama race.
Todd, what about the Giuliani withdrawal? Our time's short. We've barely touched it. But what's the core lesson that everybody says it was a mistake for him to wait for Florida? But what about Giuliani's message, his background? Is there something bigger than tactics here that led to him falling out after leading for a long time?
Yeah, I wish we knew the answer to that. And the reason we don't is because he waited till Florida. You know, there's never really a chance to test the proposition. You know, it was an interesting idea that you could kind of sit out the first few contests. And boy, it just did not work. Once you are out of that conversation for the 4 weeks in which people really begin to start paying attention to the contest that's unfolding before their eyes, and you're not in the game, the idea that you can rally back from that, I'm not sure whether there was, you know, I suppose there were technical mistakes in the Giuliani campaign, but even if it had been perfect, this strategy does not look like it's got a future.
Here's Jon Stewart of The Daily Show having fun with Rudy Giuliani's now-failed campaign plan.
Giuliani decided to focus all of his attention on Florida, making the state, for lack of a better term, ground zero in his president. No, you know what? That's not... Ground zero is not really the right... Help me out here, pundits. What would it...
Rudy Giuliani. He put all of his eggs in Florida's basket.
Put his eggs in all in one basket.
Giuliani put all of his eggs in the Florida basket.
And this morning, they are cracking.
Yes. Ha ha ha. Eggs in a basket. Jack, in a word, who does Edwards' withdrawal help on the Democrat side?
According to the Gallup poll, just out, it's splitting evenly.
And the Giuliani Schwarzenegger endorsements, Todd Lindbergh, will they really boost McCain?
Yeah, they're helping him in win the news cycle day to day.
And we don't have many days at this point to Super Tuesday, just next week. Very few days now. Todd Lindbergh, Weekly Standard and Hoover Institution at the Policy Review there. Thanks very much for being with us, Todd.
Glad to be with you.
Krista Freeland, you're terrific with the Financial Times out of New York. Krista, thanks so much for joining us.
It was a great pleasure.
Jack, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.